Opening night. Cold hot panic. Rushing thought bubbles. Easing in. Find the voice. Never let them see you shake. Missing chances. Dropping all my lines. Perfection unattained. But something new emerges. Gave it away. No longer ours now. Another first show gone. That theater beast can sleep.
Welcome to the Moss Island Sounds Podcast, Episode 8. I'm Chris Board. We're sponsored this week and every week by Finelli Sound and Lighting, a Utica, New York production company that can help with your live sound and stage lighting needs. This studio was set up by Joe, and I call him whenever I do technical direction on a live production. His number is 315-794-0706. Or just look him up on Facebook for consistently witty posts. It's show week. I'm appearing in the Players of Utica production God of Carnage, so that's all the news I can focus on right now. Sting once said that he'd like to see a critic get up and try to entertain an audience. Of course, there are others who feel a performer has no business writing criticism, which is why I'm going to keep on doing both. God of Carnage is a comedy about ambivalent parents, who are some of my favorite people. Parenthood is one of those great Hallmark whitewashes. You're supposed to love your kids more than life, support them no matter what they do, and gently but firmly correct them when they stray. You've seen social media reposts upon reposts. If I only had one breath, I'd use it to tell my children how much I love them, and blah, blah, blah. When life doesn't match the bromide, some feel guilty. Modern American society is gripped by a cult of the child, with assorted devotions and mandatory sacrifices required to maintain good standing. A recent book is titled All Joy and No Fun, The Paradox of Modern Parenthood. I love the title. It comes from an honest, clever, ambivalent parent. God of Carnage is not a sitcom. There's only one gag, but a comedy of manners that blows up the cult of the child. The taboo it tackles, parental dishonesty, is perhaps too raw to consider any other way. The action takes place as two couples meet to discuss a playground altercation between their 11-year-old boys. What begins with good parental intentions devolves into an evening of brawls, mostly but not entirely verbal. I play Alan, who kicks off the brawling with this delicious line. "Madam, our son is a savage." The other night, I was in the middle of a monologue when my lines disappeared, erased from my brain like a computer disk by a magnet. Time stretched and indecision congealed. In that moment, I couldn't have told you the name of the play, let alone what I was supposed to say next. Theater people are superstitious. We practice routines. Another actor asked what I had done differently that day. I'd rehearsed all of my lines twice. I usually ran them once. "Don't ever do that again," she said. As Kevin Costner's Crash Davis proclaimed in Bull Durham,
"If you believe you're playing well because you're getting laid, or because you're not getting laid, or because you wear women's underwear, then you are! And you should know that!"
At its best, live theater can bring situations and ideas to life. It is unmistakably created in the moment, for the audience right there in the room. Performers adjust their rhythm, waiting for laughter or applause, riding the energy of the crowd. The coordination of acting, sound, lights, props, set, and effects often works so well it can be surprising when something fails. Last night was opening night, and I had a few more of those scary moments. Eventually, the character took over and the fearful, inadequate actor receded. Tonight, we do it again. God of Carnage, a comedy of manners without the manners, is at Players of Utica, April 17th through 19th, and the 23rd through the 26th. Details and tickets at www.playersofutica.org. Alex Gibney's documentary Going Clear, Scientology and the Prison of Belief, based on Lawrence Wright's 2013 book, has the potential to rock your world. Although South Park's brilliant Trapped in the Closet already covered the same ground, Going Clear features stellar interviews with a handful of ex-Scientologists. If a 21-minute cartoon parody doesn't convince you that Scientology is batshit crazy, see this film. Beware, by the end, you'll question a lot more than just Scientology. Variety's Scott Foundas wrote, "Gibney has made a great film about the dangers of blind faith. Many faiths are at least somewhat blind. In dismantling a specific belief system, Gibney and Wright provide a template that can be applied to other religions, clubs, cults, or corporations. In a sense, Going Clear is a continuation of previous Gibney films, Enron, The Smartest Guys in the Room, Mea Maxima Culpa, Silence in the House of God, and even Taxi to the Dark Side, an investigation of U.S. torture practices in Afghanistan, Iraq, and Guantanamo Bay. All of these concern powerful organizations doing terrible things and excusing, hiding, denying all under the cover of a higher calling. Religions and clubs, even corporations and countries, often do good, of course. I have a friend who wants to read L. Ron Hubbard's Dianetics, the book that established the basis for Scientology. She heard that it helps people get past hang-ups and achieve their potential. Sounds good. That's the lure. But every step has a price tag. Escalation of commitment reinforces faith to the point where adherents accept increasingly outlandish requirements. When a personal belief system imposes on others, it's gone too far. In the case of Scientology, the organization purchases real estate and doesn't pay taxes. It also litigates furiously and employs other more physically direct means of intimidating those who leave the organization or speak out against it. Some have criticized Gibney's use of imaginative visual techniques to illustrate Going Clear. Anthony Kaufman writes in Screen Daily, "Some reenactments are heavy-handed or sensationalistic. I'd be more concerned if that's all he had, but the embellishments are usually obvious. We don't mistake them for primary source material. Also, on-camera interviews comprise the bulk of the film. So if some parts are a bit flashy, they arguably provide momentum and underscore various points. Flash doesn't compromise the facts." The stories told in Going Clear are harrowing. The film's title refers to one of the main goals for Scientologists, when individuals become clear of psychological impediments and are able to achieve their maximum potential. The title also applies to those who have escaped the organization. Most of Gibney's subjects used to be high-ranking Scientology officials. They describe a paranoid corporate culture devoted to making as much money as possible. Members of the Sea Org, the group's paramilitary wing, work for extremely low wages, sometimes pennies per hour. Sea Org runs The Hole, a prison camp where dissenters are compelled to do hard labor and are often physically and emotionally abused. Famous faces Tom Cruise and John Travolta don't fare well in this movie. Cruise in particular is given plenty of screen time to appear crazy. He seems to be playing the role of Tom Cruise's super Scientologist. The ongoing involvement of celebrities might be why so many give Scientology a pass, as in, Tom Cruise is rich and famous, how bad could it be? Luckily, Gibney has other celebrities on hand, writer-director Paul Haggis, actor Jason Begg, to explain why they started and why they got out. The larger mystery is why anybody would remain in Scientology if the assertions in Gibney's film are true. The Guardian's Brian Moylan wrote that the film is a bit one-sided. Doubtless church officials would issue a full denial of all claims. They declined Gibney's invitation to comment. But their lack of involvement means it's easy to be skeptical about some of the more outlandish claims made by former members. This is where we need to apply Gibney's template. Have I witnessed organizations that lure adherents, suck their time and money, compel them to do things they wouldn't otherwise do, and punish those who disagree? Oh yeah. I've gone clear of my share. I believe Wright and Gibney's portrayal, hopefully their work and South Park's, will help tear down the Church of Scientology. If not that, maybe it will open some eyes to other prisons of belief. Last week I included a song from my old band. The band was called 3.3, after a Bible verse, a Christian rock band that stayed together probably as long as most rock bands do, just a few months. We perform maybe 6 times. But I love practicing with the group. This is a sound collage of some of my favorite moments.
Everything that has breath, praise the Lord. Everything that has breath, praise the Lord.
To surrender our all. and just keep on living.
How far is heaven?
And Lord, can you tell me?
How far is heaven?
'Cause I just gotta know how far.
How far is heaven?
And Lord, can you tell me?
How far is heaven?
'Cause I just gotta know how far. Childhood, I walked the walk that I saw my father walk, lived the way he taught me how to live. I prayed the prayers my mother prayed, learned to kneel and to obey, but I never heard God answer, so I left. Did God say to me that one day I'd be free? Was it fiction, even worse, was it a lie? 'Cause the walls are closing in, all the world I'm in tells me God is dead. Save yourself and you'll be fine. Looking for all the answers, but all I find is still more questions. If God exists, I wish you'd somehow let me know. Just take away my hurt and pain, all this misery and shame. Just take me in his arms and heal my soul.
Sky and land.
A few years ago, I wrote an essay about my struggles with Christianity. This is a reduced version of that essay, edited for this podcast. You can find the original, much longer version at mossislandsounds.com. Search on keyword Christianity. When I was 16, I found myself on a campus crusade for Christ mission, handing out groceries to inner-city Philadelphians. The staging area was a comfortable hotel. During the day, we were dropped off in teams of three, armed with bags of groceries and tracts. To get the groceries, someone had to listen to our pitch. Later, we tallied successful pitches on a chalkboard. Those who achieved the highest scores were rock stars, the spiritual giants we aspired to be. I'd been evangelized by a group called Young Life at a glorious camp in the Adirondacks when I was 15. Their religion seemed sunny and fun. Of course, I was someone's chalk tally too, but it was a terrific bag of groceries. Most of what I'd later call my spiritual journey would consist of various attempts to return to the emotional experience I'd had at that camp. Have you heard this question? If you were to die tonight, do you know for certain where you'd spend eternity? The honest answer must be no, and neither does anybody. Evangelists are like car salesmen standing on empty lots. Their product is described and promised, but always in some vague future. They make a leap of imagination, or faith, depending on your point of view, that there is a wonderful heaven waiting for believers and a terrible hell for everyone else. But there's no objective evidence it's true. Certainly people seek God because they want to go to heaven, and evangelists use the fear of death and hellfire as their trump card. Theologians have worked diligently over centuries to elaborate on the Christian model, and there is beauty in it. But ultimately, the construct must be accepted blindly, and we can't ignore that the model has been constructed out of human fears and wishes. So why not accept Islam on faith? If I'd been raised in a Muslim tradition, I probably would have explored Islam. It also attempts to explain the human condition, encourages certain behavior, and provides hope for eternity. But I know plenty of Christians who believe Muslims are going to hell, and I'm sure there are Muslims who feel the same about Christians. Who's right? Apologetics is the art of providing a rational basis for faith in a given religion. I don't know many Christians who are good at it. They tend to fall back on, you gotta have faith, when pressed. The subject fascinated me for a time. Most Christian apologists use a common structure, prove the Bible's reliable so that it can be taken at its word, as a historical document instead of spiritual, then examine the faith tenets on a point-by-point basis using the Bible as proof for each item. If the audience isn't convinced the Bible's factual, it casts doubt on every other claim. Some evangelists like to say, put God to the test. That is, pray and see for yourself what God can do in your life. The Bible says that God will grant whatever is asked for in faith. Of course, most people know instinctively that it doesn't work that way, and an evangelist might have a response such as this, God always answers prayer. The answer is yes, no, or wait. Others will say the disappointed prayer didn't have enough faith. Recent medical research has shown that prayer is similar to meditation, in that it can activate certain pleasure centers in the brain. In other words, there is evidence that prayer makes people feel good, which makes God's response irrelevant. And that's good, especially when the evidence suggests that God is indifferent to prayer. After I recommitted myself as a teenage Christian, I attended three evangelical churches, three Presbyterian, one Pentecostal, one Southern Baptist, and two Roman Catholic churches. Each of these had its differences with the others, and all believed themselves to be a relatively exclusive path to God. I even attended a Christian seminary for one semester. I took soteriology, the doctrine of salvation, and biblical Greek. I've been on several leadership teams at various churches. I've read the entire Bible at least three times. By delving deeply into many Christian traditions, I've attempted to understand and develop my own spiritual core. Churches welcome new members but often despise those who leave. When I left a Southern Baptist church, the pastor announced in front of the congregation and my children that I was leading my family on a road to hell. I've actually lost track of the number of times I've been told I'm going to hell, although I remember some of the reasons. They include, but are not limited to, wearing a Catholic rosary as a necklace without going to confession, remarrying following my divorce, and supporting the right of same-sex couples to marry. Those who insist I won't go to hell for any of the above seem to be as certain as those who believe I will. Can any one version of God be true? I've met people who think God gives points for effort, that is, he values their sincere belief in something. If that's reality, then all faith traditions are essentially true. It seems just as likely that no faith tradition is true. Christians, Muslims, Hindus, Jews have all missed the mark, and who can say by how much? If God exists, he doesn't seem interested in resolving the conflict, and this is perhaps the strongest evidence in favor of the atheist's position. To the extent that religion is helpful to people, I'm in favor of it. If a church concentrates resources to support the needy in social justice causes, or provides a community for mutual support and friendship, or provides comfort and pleasure to its adherents, I'm for it. I'm not interested in religion that exists for God's sake, the God who counts sacrifices and takes offense at rosaries worn as necklaces and the like. Some people reject church as so much theater, liturgies that have nothing to do with their vision of God, who presumably could care less. But I like theater, and the idea of church as theater interests me. To the extent that rituals and symbols provide pleasure and inspire the participant, church is not so different from a museum or a concert hall. Great art lifts the human spirit, and the best religious liturgies have always understood this. Again, if the focus is on religion for God's sake, none of it should matter. But if it's all about people, then a wide variety of traditions starts to make sense. Many people use their faith as an excuse to infringe on the rights of their fellow citizens. The root of the Ten Commandments and most religious moral teaching is essentially don't impose your will on others. However, today we see religious objection to same-sex marriage and to government requirements to provide contraceptive coverage and health insurance plans, as well as other impositions that force one group's interpretation of God's will on everyone else. At the end of the day, I acknowledge the contribution a church can make in the lives of individuals and in the community, positive and negative. With the best of intentions, I will keep working for the positive.
I'm just waiting on the sun to close his eyes and call the night, so we can put all our differences aside. I'm just waiting on the moon with all the stars and all its gloom. We can watch it fall right back into place.
So you can find more essays and criticism at mossislandsounds.com. We're on Facebook and Twitter as Moss Island, all one word. Email me at chris.board@mac.com. Thank you for listening. Until next time. The original writing for the Moss Island Sounds podcast is owned by Chris Board and Moss Island Sounds, copyright 2015. Unauthorized use and or duplication of this material without express and written permission from Chris Board is strictly prohibited. Excerpts and links may be used provided that full and clear credit is given to Chris Board and Moss Island Sounds with appropriate and specific direction to the original content.